welcome everybody back, and I trust that Yom Tov was enjoyable for everybody. By request, the topic for the next couple of weeks, you know, the Kayetzman, you know, the summer semester, so to speak, is the topic of opening up food packages on Shabbos. And this, just as we know from personal experience, is for many people one of the most complicated aspects of Shmiras Shabbos, and one of the aspects of Shabbos observance where if you talk to 5 different people, you'll get 10 or maybe even 15 different opinions about what's permissible and what's prohibited. So as we probably know, you know, there is a range of opinions in Poskim, and what we'll try to do is to present, you know, what the issues are, what the different opinions are, and at least this way we'll have a better understanding of you know, why it is that some people do one thing and why it is that other people do something else, and what the relative severity of, you know, the different issues is. Really, the question of opening up food packages on Shabbos is not one single issue, because for every different kind of food container or food package, it's a totally separate group of issues in Hilchos Shabbos, to the point where, you know, what I hold about bottle caps really has nothing to do with what I hold about opening up milk cartons, which has nothing to do with opening up tuna cans, which has nothing to do with opening up potato chip bags. I mean, each one is really a separate group of issues, and as we'll see, they're really not related, you know, one to another at all. You can hold one way with regard to certain kinds of packages and a different way with regard to other packages, and all the permutations thereof, which makes the whole, you know, which makes the whole area a much more complicated one to understand. So we're not going to go through everything tonight, but I wanted to at least start and focus on one particular aspect of food packages on Shabbos, which is the least strict or the least severe of all of the things that we're going to talk about, and that's the issue of sugar packets and the like on Shabbos. Right, for the calorie conscious, we can talk about Splenda packets, you know, sweet and low packets. You know, from a halachic perspective, there isn't much difference between whether it's sugar inside the packet or sweet and low. But what is the halacha concerning tiny paper? It doesn't have to be tiny, but in other words, paper wrappings or utterly disposable wrappings, which are torn open in order to access the food inside, and then ripped up, torn apart, and thrown out in the garbage immediately after use. What is the halacha concerning ripping those items open on Shabbos? So one's intuition is that they should be ripping these sugar packets open should be absolutely prohibited. That's one's intuition, based on a very simple calculation. If you go through the list of the 39 prohibited malachas, which are prohibited on Shabbos, the Lamites malachas, so one of the list is koreya, is ripping, is tearing, right? So again, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist over here to go through the following calculation. Well, you know, if you're not allowed to tear on Shabbos, and certainly we know we do our utmost to refrain from tearing things on Shabbos, and ripping open a sugar packet is tearing, so it would seem to follow that you're not allowed to rip open a sugar packet on Shabbos. Okay, we can call the shiur quits. We can send everybody home. And okay, you know, so it's prohibited. There's nothing more to talk about. What this very straightforward but incorrect calculation doesn't take into account is a statement which appears in a body of literature called the Tosefta. The Tosefta is a body of literature that was written at the same time as the Mishnayos, so that would mean it was written about 200 CE. It was written by the Tanoim, the same the great sages, people like Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Meir, you know, the sages quoted within the Tosefta are the same sages who were quoted within the Mishnayos. And the Tosefta tells us the following halacha, and this halacha is recorded without any argument by the later poskim. Says the Tosefta as follows. Used to be back in the day that they would keep wine in large barrels You know, you couldn't walk into your local liquor store and buy a nice glass bottle of wine. The wine was kept in, you know, big barrels. And the way the wine was protected was that a piece of leather was drawn over the open mouth of the casket and, you know, tied or attached to the top of the basket in some way. It was pulled very taut over the top of the casket, and the casket rather, I think that's the basket? The basket?
Cask.
It was pulled over the top of the cask, and, you know, it was pulled taut, and that way, I guess, you know, it was airtight, it was as airtight as they could make it, so that, you know, the wine wouldn't be contaminated. What happened when it came time to take the wine out and to serve the wine? So says the Tosefta, one is allowed to take a knife and rip open the leather covering which is on top of the barrel, and you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. That's the Tosefta. The Magen Avraham, one of the commentaries on Shulchan Aruch, quotes this Tosefta, and it's considered to be authoritative in a halachic sense. Question is why? Right? Why is it that taking the knife and ripping open the leather covering for the barrel is not going to be a problem on Shabbos? Why is that not a problem, a violation of the malacha, the Torah prohibition of koreya, of tearing? See, here we find in the poskim that there are three different approaches to explain why this halacha in the Tosefta is true. Okay, let me just stress at the outset, there's no question that the halacha is true. In other words, nobody argues on the facts, right? You know, the fact that you're allowed to take a knife and cut open the leather, you know, that's beyond dispute. In other words, nobody argues on that point. The only question which we're going to take up is why that should be true, and we'll see the answer to why might have some very profound implications in terms of understanding the malacha, or the prohibited activity of koreya, of tearing on Shabbos. The first...
The lamed melachot that we are not allowed to do are concerned with the melachot shehayu bebet hamikdash.
Right.
Hakriya ulai bebet hamikdash, like you tore al menat la'asot mashu.
Okay.
It was not just tearing. Here, the tearing is to get access to something.
Okay, yeah.
To something. It's not in order to...
Right, so what we'll see along those lines, I mean, one thing you have to say, just, you know, looking at this halacha, is that obviously not every case of tearing is going to be a case of kriya. In other words, there'll be cases of what halachically is, you know, not considered to be kriya. It's not a violation of koreya, even though in English, you know, we would call it tearing or ripping. So the first approach to understanding this Tosefta is given by the Chazon Ish. Right? The Chazon Ish passed away a little more than 50 years ago, one of the Gedolim of the last generation or the two generations ago already, I guess at this point. But the Chazon Ish explains this Tosefta with the following analogy. Right? We all know, just from our own experience, that you're allowed to eat oranges on Shabbos. Not only are you allowed to eat oranges on Shabbos, you're allowed to peel oranges on Shabbos. Right? No one has ever prohibited peeling oranges on Shabbos, although I guess if we stick around long enough, you know, maybe somebody will come along and do it. But that's clear, it's black on white, that peeling oranges on Shabbos, shelling eggs and things of that nature is permissible. Why isn't peeling oranges a problem of tearing? So, says the Chazon Ish, the peel of the orange is considered to be simply a klipa, a covering for the orange, and you're allowed to tear it, you know, because that's the shell of the orange, so to speak, the outer shell. You're allowed to tear it in order to gain access to the orange itself. It's not considered to be tearing, the same way that when you cut into your chicken Friday night, it's also not considered to be tearing. You know, that's just, you know, that's just separating the various parts of a food item, right? Not in a borer sense, right? That would be prohibited, separating good from bad. But just cutting up a piece of chicken, cutting up a piece of fish, that's not called tearing, even though you're taking an object and separating it into different parts. That's, you know, that's cutting in the process of eating is never included in the prohibition against koreya. Similarly, removing an outer shell or an outer peel is also not considered to be a problem of koreya, of tearing. Says the Chazon Ish, let's just take it one step further. So, you know, instead of there being an inedible peel which covers over the orange, look at this leather which is covering over the barrel with wine as being the equivalent of the peel, of the orange peel. And the same way I can rip apart the orange peel, and I could use whatever I want to rip apart the orange peel. I can use a knife, I can use some other kind of instrument to rip the orange peel apart on Shabbos. It's also, by the same token, I'm allowed to take the knife and rip the leather in order to gain access to the wine, because the leather is simply considered to be a peel. Right? So that's the Chazon Ish's interpretation of why, again, not what, everybody agrees to the what, but why this particular act of ripping apart the leather is considered to be permissible. And, you know, by extension, if you take a look at the sugar packet, where you rip apart the sugar packet in order to gain access to the sugar, because that's the only thing that you're looking to do over here, that would be analogous to ripping apart the leather in order to gain access to the wine. Yeah.
An apple
pill
is edible, and yet, let's say,
gives
to a child and doesn't like it.
Right. So there, it's actually, it's a little different. The Ramah writes that if it's an edible peel, so then you should take it. Actually, there's a little bit of a difference. If it's an inedible peel, so the inedible peel has to be removed immediately prior to eating it. Right. So you're not supposed to peel it for a later date. If it's an edible peel, you can remove it and then eat it later on, you know, on that Shabbos itself. You can peel it in the morning. I don't know why you'd want to do that, but you could peel it in the morning and serve it in the afternoon, right? But either way, whether the peel is edible or inedible, for immediate use, you're certainly allowed to, you know, to peel it right away. So again, in the analogous case with the sugar packets, I mean, I can't think of anyone who would rip open a sugar packet and then put it aside, you know, for later use. I mean, when you rip it open, generally speaking, your interest is to use it right away. So it would follow the example of this, you know, of this case with the leather that's stretched out over the wine barrel.
Why wouldn't that be the case for any edible thing that you want to take out of the table?
That may vary. Well, the difference over here is that the sugar packet is going to be disposed of. It's going to be destroyed, right? Per se, in other words, that obviates the issue of koreya.
In other words, you can't save the orange peel candy that some later time once you're just eating the orange.
In other words, the truth is that you could do. The thing is, over here you're getting rid of the issue of koreya, right? Now, with other packages, which we'll get to in subsequent shiurim, there are other issues besides koreya which have to be dealt with. The reason sugar packets is a good place to start is because really the only problem that you deal with is the issue of koreya, of tearing. There is no issue, for instance, of asiyas kli, of making a new container, creating something new, destroying a utensil. You know, because it's so flimsy and so impermanent, you know, so the only thing you'd ever have to worry about is ripping. And here we see that ripping or tearing is not considered to be a problem.
The only motivation that we have to do any of those things isn't to create a kli or any of those things.
Right, but our motivation might not be good enough. In other words, I might not be motivated to make a kli, but if I am making a kli, you know, so... not even maybe I'll use it, but just the very fact that I'm making a kli is problematic, whether or not I care about the fact that I made a kli. But again, I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves. In other words, that we'll see when we get there. Right now, again, this is just, it's a simpler place to start because there's really one issue that has to be addressed, and once we get around the issue of koreya, you know, so we'll see. That's, you know, it really should not present the problem. Yeah.
Does it matter if it's not an edible substance?
What's inside?
Yeah.
So it's actually interesting. Shmir Shabbos kill.
Packets of chemicals.
Right, so the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, Rav Neuber, extends this idea, of course, I think from the name of the Chazal Nish also, that this idea would extend to anything which you need in order to facilitate eating on Shabbos, whether or not it's actually a food item. So in other words, you have a plastic package of plastic forks. As you rip it open, you know, in order to get it to plastic forks with a packaged tablecloth, you know, which is in a plastic seal or a paper seal or something like that. So the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa says, you know, even though the Tosefta is talking about wine, in other words, the thing that's inside that you're getting at is the actual food, by extension, again, I think it goes from the Chazon Ish also, by extension, anything which is necessary for eating for that Shabbos, you know, tearing the outer seal would not be a problem of Korea, because you're just ripping it and throwing it out. Korea is something where you're tearing in a certain fashion. We'll talk about what Korea is. If this is not Korea, we'll talk about what Korea is in just a minute.
So there's no problem
with opening packages and tearing. So the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa makes that extension. It's not poshut to make such an extension. It's not self-evident to make such an extension, but the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, you know, certainly is one of the major poskim a person can rely upon. But he extends it to non-edible items which are necessary for food. Yeah. We'll get the letters. Let's start. You bought a very generic sugar package that has no letters on it. We'll get the letters, right? Unlike the Domino sugar ones where they put Domino like every single square inch, you know, there's a letter there. But we'll get to the lettering. The Alta Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Baal HaTanya, has a different take in his Shulchan Aruch on this psak from the Tosefta, and he comes up with a very, very novel idea. The Gemara discusses that all the malachas that are prohibited on Shabbos ultimately go back, as Rebbe Zin Hefler pointed out, to the way certain activities were done in the Mishkan. So where was Korea, where was tearing done in the Mishkan? So the Gemara tells us that when they were making the curtains for the Mishkan, if there was ever a wormhole that got into one of the curtains of the Mishkan, you know, they didn't want to have curtains hanging in the Mishkan that, you know, it was a holy place, but, you know, they didn't want to have holes in the curtains. So what would they do? They would rip the curtain along the vertical line where the hole was, and then they would stitch it back up together from the back. So in other words, the hole, quote unquote, disappeared, you know, but the tearing of the curtain was done in order to be able to restitch it, right? It wasn't just tearing aimlessly or destructively or without a purpose. It was tearing the curtain in order to be able to sew it back together. Says the Alta Lubavitcher Rebbe, the only source for tearing is tearing something which is woven, right? In the case in the Gemara, you're taking a curtain which is woven. It's woven material, and the act of tearing, in a sense, undoes the act of weaving, right? If you think about what the weaving is, as the weaving is taking the different parts of the thread and weaving them together, when you tear the curtain, in a sense, that's the opposite of doing the weaving. You're undoing the weave. So says the Baal HaTanya, says the Alta Lubavitcher Rebbe, since the only source that we have for tearing is in the context of woven curtains or woven items, items which are not woven are not subject to the prohibition against tearing. In the case in the Tosefta, we're talking about a piece of leather which is stretched out on top of the barrel of wine. So why is it that you're allowed to tear this leather? So not like the Chazon Ish explained a moment ago, that it's because you're gaining access to the food and that the leather is considered to be like a peel. No, you're allowed to tear the leather because you're always allowed to tear leather, because the only thing which presents a problem in terms of tearing to begin with is tearing something which is woven, tearing cloth. anything which is not woven together is just by definition not subject to the prohibition against tearing. Now, this is a tremendous chiddush, right? A very, very novel idea. I mean, something which is, really a very novel way of looking at things. I mean, if you just follow through the Baal HaTanya, you know, the Alter Lubavitch Rebbe, to the logical conclusion, so, you know, you can tear a lot of things. You can rip paper. You can rip paper on Shabbos, according to the Baal HaTanya, right? I think there's a little bit of a weave. I don't know if that would count as a weave, though, according to the Baal HaTanya. I mean, it's not a perceptible weave, certainly. I mean, you have to really look with a microscope to be able to see the weave. But, you know, certainly if you extend that to paper, so, I mean, that opens up either a lot of opportunities or Pandora's box, you know, depending on how you're going to look at it. It really constricts to a very great extent the extent to which Korea tearing is going to be a problem on Shabbos. Now, just to be fair, there will be many cases where if you tear a piece of paper, for instance, you may not be in violation of Korea, of tearing, but you'll be in violation of other different malachas, different prohibitions among the 39 malachas. I mean, let's take a classic example, which again is just, it's not related to food packages per se, but it's worthwhile to just discuss this because from time to time it comes up. We know from our practice that toilet paper is not supposed to be torn on Shabbos, right? So why aren't you allowed to, you know, it's kind of a klutz kasha, right? Why aren't you allowed to tear toilet paper on Shabbos? So 20 minutes ago, if somebody would have asked this question, you would have said, well, I mean, one of the 39 malachas is that you can't tear on Shabbos. So if I can't tear, I can't tear toilet paper, right? I mean, that would seem to be pretty obvious. But according to the Baal HaTanya, according to the Alter Lubavitcher Rebbe, so, you know, all of a sudden that answer doesn't sound like it's such a good answer anymore, because I can tear paper, at least in many circumstances. It's not considered to be a woven item. So when it comes to tissue paper, to toilet paper, there is another Torah prohibition which is potentially evolved, and that's the prohibition of mechatech b'midah. Mechatech b'midah means to cut something to a specific size, right? In the original context, in the Gemara talks about how they would take leather and they would score it, and then they would cut the leather into equal pieces in order to be able to utilize the leather. Whenever you cut something to a specific size, that's its own prohibition of mechatech b'mida, of cutting something to specifics. So to the extent to which you have, let's say, paper towels or toilet paper, and you tear them on the perforation in order to get a specific size towel or a specific size tissue paper, right? I'm sorry? Oh, okay, so that we'll have to talk about, but I mean, at least in some cases you want a certain amount, you know, you want a certain number of sheets or something like that. To the extent to which you're tearing a specific number or in a specific area, even if paper is not subject to the prohibition of Korea, it's still certainly is subject to the prohibition of Mechatech B'mida. Witness the fact that the quintessential case of mechatech b'mida involves leather, which the Baal HaTanya himself acknowledges is not subject to the prohibition of korea, of tearing. Now, I mention this just to bring up an important halacha l'maisa point, and you know, again, it's not really directly relevant to the subject at hand tonight, but it's a good thing to be aware of. I mean, obviously, we do our utmost to either put tissues in the, you know, in the restroom, or pre-cut toilet paper, you know, prior to Shabbos, but yeah, every once in a while a person finds themselves in a situation where, you know, it's just not there, you know, and it's not easily accessible. And, you know, as the halacha itself teaches, you know, there's a concept of kavod habrius, of human dignity, which allows us to, you know, to rely on certain leniencies which we wouldn't look to do in the first place. But, you know, once you're stuck in a situation, you know, one could be more lenient than one would normally be under normal circumstances. If one finds oneself in a situation where you have to tear toilet paper on Shabbos because you don't have a choice, the better way to do it is to tear it not on the perforations. Right? That's a little, sometimes that's a little counterintuitive to people, because people say, you know, it's so easy, it's half done for me anyway, right? I mean, it's better, let me tear on the perforation, because I'm only doing 50% of the tearing, right? I mean, half of it is already torn. The problem is, again, if you tear it not on the perforations, so then it's very likely, at least according to the Bala Tanya, that you're not doing anything. That's a Shabbos prohibition, right? If you tear it on the perforations, you've already, you know, you're not just dealing with issues of Kareya, you're dealing with issues of Mechatech B'mida, of cutting something to specification, and that's a more severe prohibition. So again, when you're, you know, you're in a situation where you don't have a choice, you know, if one's going to tear it anywhere, it's better to tear it in the middle, not on the perforations. You know, that would be the better way of handling that particular situation. Yeah?
And about plenty of time, was paper used as a commodity if people would tear and things like that? Was he just doing this theoretically in terms of the leather as opposed to...
No, I don't think it was theoretical. Already Shulchan Aruch talks about the use of paper and tearing paper. Shulchan Aruch in the 1500s. The Bala Tanya. You know, I don't think they used it as, you know, as frequently as we use it today. We use paper for everything, right? But, you know, they had paper, they used paper, and, you know, the Shulchan Aruch talks, one of the things that prompts the Bala Tanya to say what he does is because Shulchan Aruch says if you tear a piece of paper in half, you're guilty of creating a kli, creating a vessel with the piece of paper that you're going to then use for something.
So, piece of paper,
right, so the implicit question in that, which the Bala Tanya is saying, so why aren't you violating Kareya? I mean, forget about creating a kli with half of the piece of paper. Why aren't you guilty of Kareya just by the fact that you tore? I mean, let's say you're not using it, right? So that's part of what prompts the Bala Tanya to say, well, it must be that you're not violating Kareya by virtue of tearing the paper. The Mishnah Brura lives about 100 years after the Bala Tanya, refers to this position of the Bala Tanya in his commentary, in his Bir Halacha commentary to Hilchos Shabbos, and he's so not happy with this position of the Bala Hatanya that he doesn't even name the Bala Hatanya as the author of this position. If you go through Mishnah Brura, the Mishnah Brura quotes very frequently from the Alter Lubavitcher Rebbe. You know, he referred to his work, in his halacha works at least, he referred to the Shulchan Aruch Harav, his halacha works very frequently throughout the Mishnah Brura. So, I mean, clearly he knew who had authored this particular position, but he was so not into this position of the Bala Tanya, he so thoroughly rejected it, that, you know, Chafetz Chaim, you know, certainly didn't want to say bad about it, you know, another posek. He was so careful, he was so not enamored of the position that when he discusses it, he doesn't even give the Bala Tanya's name as the author of this position. He just quotes, you know, there's a certain Sefer, a certain Gadol who wrote this, but then he goes and says, no, but it's totally wrong, it can't be, it's not correct. But then the Bala Tanya, the Mishnah Brura rather, himself, goes on to offer a very, almost equally novel position with regard to the laws of Kareya. Says the Mishnah Brura, he thinks, he uses the Hebrew term, lulei demistafina amina, which literally translates as, if I wasn't afraid to say it, I would say the following, which of course is just a nice way of saying, I'm about to say something very novel, so, you know, don't get all bent out of shape. I mean, if he was really afraid to say it, he wouldn't say it, right? But he introduces this line by saying, lulei demistafina amina, if I wasn't afraid to say the following, I would say the following. And he says the following, that Kareya is only violated when you use both halves of the item which you tore. Right? If you go back to the original case from the Gemara, they had a curtain in the Mishkan. The curtain was torn down the middle, and then the two sides of the curtain were sewn back together again. You know, and they were sewn back in such a way so that the seam eliminated the hole which had been made by the worm or the moth, you know, prior to them tearing to the curtain. Right? But in that case, they tore and they used both sides of the tear. They didn't throw anything out. They tore in order to then make use of both halves of the torn item. But says the Mishnah Brura, I think if you're going to tear something and throw out one of the sides, so then it's not going to be a violation of Koreah. That's not what the Torah labels as being tearing. So, if I wasn't afraid, I would say this, says the Mishnah Berurah. So clearly that's a very novel approach also, and clearly also that... Right, well, the only thing would be that, in other words, if I cut half of it and then use one half of it, I'm not guilty of Koreah, but I am guilty of making a kli. So, right, in other words, it does go together. In other words, two separate prohibitions. I don't violate one, but I'll violate the other. This also, I mean, opens up, again, either a world of possibilities or a Pandora's box, depending on how you look at it. So basically, certainly, if I tear something and throw away both parts, right, which again, in our day and age is so prevalent with disposable stuff, so according to the Mishnah Berurah's interpretation, that certainly would not be a violation of Koreah. So, you know, pardoning the pun, I mean, any way you slice it, whichever one of these three perspectives you take, you know, each of them in its own way explains the din, the law that's in the Tosefta, that I can cut the leather covering on top of the basket in order to access the wine. Again, everyone agrees that I can do that. The only question is why. So again, just to go through the three positions, according to the Chazon Ish, I can cut the leather to get at the wine because it's just like a peel. According to the Baal HaTanya, I can cut the leather in order to get at the wine because I can cut leather whenever I want. It's not a woven item. According to the Mishnah Berurah, I can cut the leather to get at the wine because both sides of the leather are going to be disposed of. I mean, I'm not going to seal it back up again. I'm going to rip it open and then throw out both sides of the leather. So that's also, fundamentally speaking, that's not called Koreah. Any way you look at it, that logic would apply to ripping open paper in order to get at sugar or something else inside. According to the Baal HaTanya and the Mishnah Berurah, you'd even be allowed to rip open paper or plastic to get at anything, right? I mean, according to the Mishnah Berurah and Baal HaTanya, it certainly doesn't matter whether it's an edible item inside or a non-edible item inside. Just ripping anything which is non-woven or not using both sides of it is not considered to be Koreah, fundamentally speaking. And again, as we pointed out, according to Shmir Shabbos Kilachos, who quotes the Chazon Ish himself, there's room even within the Chazon Ish's understanding for saying that it's not just food items for which you're allowed to rip open paper or plastic in order to get at them, but even to be able to get at, you know, paper goods or tablecloths or something like that, which will enable you to eat, might be included in the heter, the dispensation of the Tosefta as well. There's an interesting tshuva from Rav Moshe Zatzal, which was written in the 1930s when Rav Moshe was still in Luban, back in Russia, and was written to Rav Nechemya Katz, his brother-in-law, who was in Toledo at the time. And it's a tshuva that we'll be referring to in the subsequent shiurim, because in the tshuva, basically there for the first time in the 1930s, the question is asked to Rav Moshe back in Russia, what's the story with opening up all kinds of packages on Shabbos? You know, he discusses mostly cans, which is going to be next week's shiur, God willing, tuna cans and things like that, right? But also, in the course of the discussion, he's asked about sugar packets. You know, I guess they must have had some kind of paper sugar packets back in the 1930s. I don't know.
They probably used sugar sparingly. They probably just had people small.
Something, right. My impression I have is when they were using sugar in the 1930s, it was mostly sugar cubes or sugar, you know, in a dish or something like that. But I guess they must have had some kind of paper or some kind of packets that they were using, at least in Toledo. I don't know if they had in Luban, but you know, at least in Toledo they had. So they sent the Shaila, you know, Rabbi Katz sent the Shaila to Rav Moshe back in Russia. And with regard to the sugar packets, so we'll leave the cans aside for a moment. With regard to the sugar packets, basically Rav Moshe writes back, fundamentally speaking, it should be mutter, you know, there shouldn't be a problem with it. But you know, if you tear them and people who are not so learned see that you're tearing things on Shabbos, you know, they'll come to, you know, be much more lax and lenient with regard to other aspects of Hilchos Shabbos. So better not to do it. That's what he writes in the 1930s. It's interesting, a few years ago I had the discussing this particular topic with the Rosh Hashiva, Reb Reuven Shlita, so I just asked him, so what does Rosh Hashiva do at home? He said, yeah, we tear sugar packets. So what I assume, okay, how do you fit that together with the tshuva? So I assume just the explanation is something along the following lines. Rav Moshe didn't fundamentally prohibit it. In the 1930s, writing from Russia to America, and again, America in the 1930s was a very different place in terms of its religious observance. Based on what he knew about America in the 1930s, writing from Russia, he surmised that, you know, tearing apart sugar packets on Shabbos would lead to a certain laxity in Shabbos observance. But with the passage of time, and Baruch Hashem, you know, as they say, Akshar Dara, the generation has gotten better in terms of its Shabbos observance. Apparently we don't need to be so concerned, about the possibility that tearing sugar packets is going to lead to people doing all kinds of things on Shabbos which actually are prohibited. And again, from a fundamental perspective, the tearing of the packet itself, as we've seen, for a variety of reasons, you know, pick whichever reason you want, but for a variety of reasons, is not going to be a prohibition of Koreya. So in terms of tearing the paper itself, there doesn't seem to be a reason to prohibit that on Shabbos. Again, it would seem to be just a clear statement in the Tosefta, more or less, that one would be allowed to tear the packet on Shabbos. Where the issue gets a little bit thorny is with the words printed on the packet, right? Let's just phrase the question as follows. If one tears apart printed words, is that a violation of the prohibition against mochek, against erasing, which is one of the 39 malachas? And as again, we indicated, just to take a typical example, I think it's domino sugar. The domino sugar packets have domino printed like all over them. You know, it's very nice. If technically speaking, you can tear the paper, but every time you're going to tear the paper, you're going to tear words. So effectively, it may be a problem tearing open the sugar packet on Shabbos, not because of Korea, not because of tearing, but because of mochek, because of the prohibition against erasing. What's the story with regard to that? See, here we have a very interesting dispute among the poskim of approximately 500 years ago. Let's ask a question in the reverse. Right? We know you're not allowed to write on Shabbos. Right? That you didn't have to come to a shiur tonight to understand. Right? You're not allowed to write on Shabbos. Let's say I take an aleph and I take a beis, you know, a Scrabble, right? I take an aleph, I take a beis, I put them next to one another. Now it spells of. It's the Hebrew word. So is that a violation of writing on Shabbos? Can I play Scrabble on Shabbos? Right? So here the Gemara says that taking two letters and placing them next to one another to spell out a word is not a violation of writing on Shabbos. Writing means writing. Writing doesn't mean bringing two preformed letters close to one another in order to spell out a word. Rav Moshe actually has a tshuva where he permits, in terms of writing, the playing of Scrabble on Shabbos. He however, objects to deluxe Scrabble, where you actually have to fit the little pieces into something else, right? Into the thing, right? You know, so, but, you know, Scrabble per se, in other words, spelling out words by taking letters and placing them next to one another without attaching them to something is not prohibited on Shabbos. What if I took pieces of a letter itself and formed the letter by placing the pieces of the letter next to one another? So in other words, instead of taking an aleph and a beis and putting them next to one another, I took an aleph, cut up the aleph into four pieces, and then I stick, you know, not even with glue, but in other words, I just take the pieces of the aleph and put them next to one another on Shabbos, so now the aleph has been created. So here, you have an old machlokas between the poskim, again going back 500 years. The Taz, Reb David Halevi Siegel, one of the classic commentators on Shulchan Aruch, says, that's totally permissible, no problem. The same way that it's not a problem to take an aleph and a beis, and put them next to one another. It's equally permissible to take half an aleph and another half of an aleph and put them next to one another also. Go ahead. You want to do that on Shabbos? What? What's that? No, we'll talk, but actually where it did come up 500 years ago, it still actually comes up today. We'll see a very common scenario, right? The Taz says it's totally mutter. The Ramah in a tshuva, Rav Moshe Isserles, the preeminent posek for Ashkenazi Jewry in a tshuva, writes also totally permissible, no problem, not a problem whatsoever. Fundamentally speaking, that is the opinion of most poskim, that, you know, bringing together a letter by assembling the component parts, you know, just half an aleph plus another half an aleph, putting them together, is not a prohibition of Shabbos whatsoever. There was a posek about 500 years ago called the Levush of Mordechai Yoffe, who was a contemporary of Rav Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, and authored a very influential work called the Levush at about the same time. The Levush writes that he thinks that taking half an aleph and another half of an aleph and putting them together, he's concerned that it might be an iser de araisa of Shabbos violation. In his words, choshishani lo mechatos. I'm not sure, says the Levush, but I think if you do this, you might have to bring a korban chatos in the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos. Right? It's a Torah prohibition. Right? Why? So says the Levush, it's one thing where there's a preformed aleph and a preformed beis to put them together. I understand that that's not a problem. But to create the aleph itself, that, says the Levush, that is going to be a problem, and, you know, one should be careful not to do that on Shabbos. Strictly speaking, the preponderance of poskim accept the view of the Ramah and the Taz that this is acceptable. But again, you know, if the Levush comes along and says, you know, there's a potential Issa Darais over here, we get a little bit nervous, you know? So we try as much as possible to accommodate the view of the Levush when we can. Now, what were they talking about, which is still an issue nowadays? So I don't remember whether in Seward Park this is an issue, but if you take out a book from the Mendel Gottesman Library of Yeshiva University, so they stamped Mendel Gottesman Library on the inside of the pages, or the outside of the pages, whatever it is, right? Such that if you open and close the book on Shabbos, you're separating the letters or putting the letters back together. That was the case, which apparently they did this 500 years ago also, right? We haven't learned in 500 years, right? Apparently 500 years ago they did this also. So that was the discussion which the Ramah and the Taz and the Levush had. Are you allowed to open and close those books on Shabbos because you're creating or destroying the letters as you're opening and closing the book? So again, the Ramah and the Taz said, don't worry about it, it's not a problem. Right, if you put in a bookmark in the right place, that would work according to the Levush, right? So the Ramah and the Taz write, don't worry about it, it's okay. Right, that's not called writing and erasing. Right? Levush said, I'm a little nervous about that. I think that is called writing and erasing when you open and close the book. The later poskim write, again, just to kind of solidify the psak, the later poskim write that if you can, it's better to be concerned for the stricter opinion of the Levush, which means if you have two books that are the same, one has the writing, one doesn't have the writing, use the one that doesn't have the writing, right? But if you don't, if you only have that one copy of the book, right? So fundamentally speaking, the later posts can say one can rely on the more lenient position of the Ramah and the Taz to open and close the book on Shabbos, right? One way around it is to put in a bookmark, you know, such a way that it breaks up the lettering to begin with, right? So that would work in many cases according to the Levush also.
Anything with destroying it.
Right, but you're writing or erasing. That's the Levush's point. Yeah? Well, you're breaking.
I mean, the word,
but the letters are not being broken down. In other words, right? No, but in other words, you're allowed to separate one letter from the next. The only discussion over here, if I took the E and I smashed it, right? But I wouldn't want to do that anyway, right? But if I took the E or the G and I smashed it, so then that would be a shiloh. According to Lavush, that would be also a
shiloh.
Oh, no, so 1 second. So let's take this and apply this to the domino sugar packet, right? So when I rip open the sugar packet, it's relatively difficult to tear it in such a way so that the D is on one side and the O is on the other side. I mean, if I'm really talented, I guess I could do that, right? But in all likelihood, if I am going to rip it in such a way, so I'm going to tear the D down the middle or the O down the middle, or at some point, you know, the letter itself is going to be ripped apart. Now, according to the Ramah and the Taz, that's not a problem. The prohibitions of writing and erasing parallel one another, right? So if we're not concerned that putting half an aleph together is writing, we would also not be concerned that ripping the D in domino sugar down the middle would be erasing. So according to the Ramah and the Taz, it would be permissible to rip the sugar packet in half, even if the words are going to be ripped as a result, right? Because what are we worried about? Erasing? That's not called erasing. In other words, separating, you know, a letter into two pieces is not considered to be erasing. The Lavush would have a problem with that, and the Lavush, again, would be concerned even for an Issa d'Oraisa, for a Torah prohibition, in terms of ripping the domino sugar packet in such a way so that the D or one of the other letters get split down the middle. So in practical terms, well, what does that mean in practical terms? In practical terms, if one can, it's better to try to tear it in such a way so that you avoid tearing the words. Right? Again, sometimes that's harder, sometimes that's easier. I know with splendid packets, if you tear it along the side, it's not so terrible. You know, again, don't rip it right down the middle. Right? But if you tear it towards the edge of it, you know, that, you know, you will avoid, in all likelihood, tearing the words. If one has a kind of packet where there's simply no other way to tear it open, other or, you know, different kinds of packets where, okay, let me choose the one that doesn't have the words as opposed to the one that does have it. It's just not feasible otherwise. But again, strictly speaking, we paskin, like the position of the Ramah and the Taz, that you can open and close the books on Shabbos, you know, without worrying about the creating or closing of the lettering. So strictly speaking, that would lead one to the conclusion that even tearing the lettering on Shabbos, if there's no other way, would be permissible in the process of opening up the sugar packet. So again, it is an issue. It's something which ideally should be avoided, but you know, one has a lot to rely upon in the event that there's simply no way around it. So just to sum up in terms of what we spoke about today, the ripping open of the sugar packet per se seems to be utterly permissible, you know, again, based on the perspective of the Tosefta, you know, that you're allowed to rip the leather covering of the wine barrel. The question of the words is a little bit more of an issue. Again, it would be ideal to try to avoid tearing the words, but in the event that one can't avoid tearing the words, one knows that one is not going to be able to avoid tearing the words. There is what to rely upon, there's a lot to rely upon, to allow one to rip open the sugar packet under those circumstances, even though, you know, one is going to be tearing the words. So that's in terms of sugar packets. What we're going to talk about next week, which is a little bit more complicated, is the question of cans, tuna cans and things of that nature. Right, now you can get packets. A lot of the stuff, as time goes on, becomes easier. But we'll talk about the issue in terms of cans, and we'll see that two Gedolei HaPoskim approach the issue from two totally opposite directions. That by Pesach Hashem will be next week. Next week we'll be starting just 5 minutes later. We're going to also try. We're going to try to stop around 9:30-ish, with the emphasis being on ish. But we won't, just because of the matter, we'll be starting 5 minutes later next week.